Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. In the second hour of our program, Dinesh D'Souza is going to drop by and say hi. In the third hour, Scott Brunton for our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment, creator of the monthly Dooz, as in D-O-O-S, Watch What You Step On. It's going to be live in the studio. But I want to start out talking today about two things. There's a couple of things that come to mind, that are on my mind, that I think are frankly important issues for us as a country and as a people to confront. And the first is the longest one, so I'm actually going to make it the second, but I think in terms of importance, it's the first. And it's what helicopter Ben Bernanke is up to, dropping piles of money on the U.S. economy. And we'll get to that in just a moment. That and the whole economic mess that we have, as it were. But in addition to that, I've had so many, as a result of having been on Countdown last Friday, and David Schuster said, you know, what should Barack Obama do about this situation with, in this case, it was the big three automakers. And I said he needs to read Alexander Hamilton's 1791 report to Congress on manufacturers. And a lot of people have contacted me saying, where can I find this? Well, you can find it on the web, although finding it in any kind of readable and complete version is rather difficult. And so I wrote one up with a bit of a commentary by me. And you can find it at commondreams.org. They posted it overnight. And we'll be moving it around to a few other places as well as the day goes on right now. But right now it's at commondreams.org. And it's titled Alexander Hamilton's Advice to Barack Obama. And we'll get to that economic stuff in a moment. I didn't want to pass on the opportunity to comment on the Caroline Kennedy nomination. I raised it very lightly yesterday with, I believe it was Ellen Ratner, one of my guests here. I think it was Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, and said, you know, how does she push back against those who suggest that she has no experience? And, you know, I've given this a lot of thought. And the Clinton camp, by the way, has signaled to their people, don't fight this. And I think that Hillary Clinton may have come to the same conclusion that I have, or maybe it's the other way around. I've come to the same conclusion she has. Or maybe not. I mean, maybe the reasons are completely different. But let me just share my take on this with you, and then, you know, you can call on it or we'll set it aside, as the case may be. I also, as I said, I think the far more important issue is that the Fed has dropped the interest rates in this country to zero, and I'm going to give you an extensive commentary on that in just a minute, too. But the bloviators who say that Caroline Kennedy doesn't have enough experience in the political world to be a U.S. senator are actually speaking in code, and you need to understand this. They say, she's not tested. We don't know her positions. What they're really saying is that she's not an insider. She's not part of the old boy network, and therefore she may not be predictable. And for the people who are the insiders, the get-along, go-along, backslapping politics of this world, whether it's Republican or Democratic, it exists in both worlds. That's a scary thing. Politicians are terrified of risk more than anything else in the world. For example, I rarely have big-name politicians on my show. For the same reason, by the way, that Mike Malloy, Randy Rhodes, Mark Levin, Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh don't. Such famous politics, these politicians who at least consider themselves famous, they typically will only go on a show that they know is safe, where the host is guaranteed to suck up to them, is going to agree to a narrow and specific group of questions in advance and won't press or argue with them and won't go off topic. A few years ago, I had a U.S. senator on this show, ostensibly about the Iraq War, and after we finished that conversation, I challenged this senator on this senator's vote on the bankruptcy bill. Got a plain vanilla answer, and later in the day, we got a call from one of the staff members, I think it was the chief of staff for that senator, saying that I had stepped over the line, that this is no way to run a talk show, that don't I know what the rules are, you know, et cetera. And of course, that senator would never be back on the show. And we don't even invite them. Don't want to do it. So, I mean, this is the backslapping old boy world of politics. And if Caroline Kennedy comes into this, the ultimate old boy club of the U.S. Senate, as an outsider without first having paid proper homage, frankly, I think it would be a great thing. It could bring it. Now, it's a possibility, and I'm taking this. I realize this is only a possibility. Who knows what kind of politician she'll be? But I think it could be a Mr. Smith goes to Washington moment for our country. I think it could be very refreshing. I think it could be a very good thing. There's no doubt she understands politics and loves and cares about her country. Her family has paid the ultimate price for such dedication. Her Uncle Joe, the oldest of the Kennedy brothers, was the one everybody thought was going to become the senator, was shot down and killed as a pilot during World War II. He actually, unlike George W. Bush, he actually went off to a war, and he died. Her Uncle Bobby was assassinated. Her father, Jack Kennedy, was assassinated, all because they believed in the promise of this country. And they dedicated their lives to her service, to this country's service. There's no doubt that Carolyn Kennedy is savvy and thoughtful. You know, look at the pivotal role that she played in the Obama campaign, not just picking a VP choice, but also lobbying her Uncle Ted to endorse Obama, which many people think was a real turning point. And she campaigned for Obama. There's no doubt her heart's in the right place. She spent much of her life helping raise money for worthy projects, particularly in the field of education. But the bloviators, but she's never run for public office. It's not small-D Democratic that she simply be handed the office. Well, actually, it is small-D Democratic because a democracy is about the rules of the game. And she is going to have to run for re-election in 2 years if she's appointed to this position. This is a huge, you know, if. But the rules are that anybody can be appointed. Why would it have to be somebody who is already part of the old boy network? Unless you're part of the old boy network and you kind of like it that way. Frankly, I'd say living by the rules is the heart of the democratic process. The big fear of the political insider class, I'm telling you, this is what you're going to see, is that Caroline Kennedy may end up behaving more on the floor of the Senate like Bernie Sanders does on my talk show. You know, Bernie and there's a few others, Brian Baird, Peter DeFazio. There's a handful of politicians who are willing to come on my program or on other programs and actually take calls from listeners, unscreened, you know, without even knowing the topic. Bernie does this every single Friday and has for 5 years. Now, I'm not suggesting that Caroline Kennedy would necessarily go on a radio talk show, but my point is that if she is out of the box like that, not the political old boy network like that, I think it would be a great thing. And I think she could be. Caroline Kennedy as Jimmy Stewart, I, for one, and am hopeful and more than willing at the moment to set aside my doubts and give her a chance to prove herself. So just to be on the record about that. Now, to the economy. Here's the problem. We are sliding into what looks like the second Republican Great Depression in the last 100 years. I mean, it's very much looking like that. And this is called deflation. And the problem with deflation, you know, with inflation, you can stop inflation by tightening the money supply, by cranking up interest rates. With deflation, once you get to the point where your interest rates are zero, which is where they are now, Bernanke, for the first time, I think in the history of the Fed, I may be wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm not, this is the first time he said, we're not going to set the interest rate at 0.25%. We're going to set it at a range from 0 to 2.5%. Now, it could go as low as 0. Once it hits 0, the only option that the Fed has to increase liquidity, to increase the number of dollars flying around, which is to stop deflation, to stop a depression, the only option that they have is to run the printing presses like crazy. And that's a step that once you take, you can't step back from. Imagine Martin Wolf writing in today's The Economist, in the Financial Times, says, you know, imagine if Midas actually was successful and everything he touched turned to gold. What would happen to gold? Its price would collapse. You know, some alchemist came up with a way of converting lead to gold or dirt to gold. What would happen? Gold would no longer be of value. So Bernanke is stepping into some territory where he may be causing, ultimately down the road, the dollar to have no value. And there's a tremendous danger here. I'll go into some more detail on this right after the break, and then we'll take your calls. Tom Hartman here with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should, too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth? It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evenings 8 to 11. AM 620 KBOJ. 620KBOJ.com.
The King of Waltz is back. André Rieu and his Johann Strauss Orchestra are back for a new series of concerts with unforgettable melodies from musical operetta, but above all, with lots of world-famous waltzes. Experience André Rieu and the Johann Strauss Orchestra.
Live at the Rose Garden, Sunday, June 14th. Tickets are on sale now at ComcastTix.com.
This is Dan Tullis, and I just called
Joel Clark,
one of Select Quote Insurance Services' term life agents.
Hi, Mr. Tullis.
Joel, how does Select Quote save you money on term life insurance?
Well, buying term life insurance is about choosing the right company. Let's say you take antidepressants or you smoke. All insurance companies are going to price that differently. Now, we'll impartially shop all the companies we represent to find you the best price.
Can you give me an example?
Sure. I just got a 40-year-old man on blood pressure medication, a $500,000 policy with a highly rated insurance company. His price? $20 a month.
Thanks, Joel. See how affordable term life insurance can be for you. Call 1-800-900-1665. That's 1-800-900-1665. Or go to SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote. We shop. You save. Get full details on the example policy at selectquote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health and other factors. Not available in all states.
How do you know your dog is healthy? IAMS knows the signs. Aw, good boy. Which is why IAMS Proactive Health helps promote 7 signs of healthy vitality. Healthy bones, muscles, heart, digestion, teeth, immune system, and a shiny coat. Phew, say that 3 times. Plus, IAMS is 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Try IAMS for 4 weeks, and if you're not completely satisfied, you'll get your money back. For more information and a $5 coupon, visit IAMS.com.
If you see a boy who struggles to walk or climb stairs, you could be noticing symptoms of Duchenne muscular dystrophy. Duchenne is the most common lethal genetic disorder of childhood. If you suspect your son or a boy you know may have Duchenne muscular dystrophy, contact Parent Project Muscular Dystrophy to learn more. Treatments exist that can make a real difference. Why not become informed about what you can do?
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Yeah, this is the real world here. And the free world here. Here's the problem. There is tremendous benefit to be gained by the George Bushes and the whole bunch of them. You know, basically, I mean, the Ronald Reagan's no longer with us, but the followers of Ronald Reagan, the Phil Grahams of the world, the very, very wealthy political insider power broker bunch who Republicans who drove our country into massive debt. And they did it, you know, David Stockman back in the day when he was budget director for the Reagan administration talked about this as the star of the beast syndrome, the beast being giving money to poor people and middle class Americans. You know, we can't have that. That's a terrible thing. So we've got to run the government into such terrible, terrible debt that it can't afford to have Social Security, that we'll have to do away with it, that there's no possibility that we'll be able to afford a national health care program. And on and on. In other words, just to make all of this stuff impossible because we're broke. And they did it. When Reagan came into office, our debt was under $1 trillion. Now it's pushing 10. We may have a deficit this year, which adds to the debt, of a full $1 trillion between the bailout and the war in Iraq. You know, not to mention just the normal deficit that we've been having ever since Reagan came into office. So there is some advantage to these guys in having hyperinflation because you get to pay off that debt with dollars that aren't worth as much. And there's a lot of creditors around the world, a lot of people who hold U.S. debt, the Chinese, the Saudis in particular, these two, but many others, who are not unaware of this. And at the first sign that we're going to try to inflate our way out of our debt, they're going to run like crazy, and our system has the possibility of crashing the same way Argentina's did two decades ago, or a decade and a half ago. On the other hand, if Bernanke does nothing, if he maintains high interest rates, if he continues to try to fight an inflation that doesn't exist, then we've got, you know, a disaster wrapped within a disaster. All of this, by the way, can be tracked back to Reaganomics. This is where it all began. 28 years ago, Ronald Reagan and his merry band of pranksters, you know, from Laffer to Stockman, I mean, the whole bunch of them, the Grover Norquist crowd, they figured, okay, what we're going to do here is we're going to starve the beast. We're going to kill government because government, after all, you know, it's not a good thing.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Got to do away with that nasty thing called government. Right? I feel it's amazing to see Republicans for 25 years now, 28 years now, run on the platform of destroying the institution that they seek to be a part of. But that's what they've been doing. And Americans have been, oddly enough, buying it. And so they have broke us. Just like Bush broke FEMA So Brownie could do a heck of a job, just like he's trying to break the EPA. They have broken our bank. They've broken our economic system. And now Bernanke is struggling. In 2000, he gave a speech in which he said, we don't have to worry about deflation. In other words, there's no depression coming. We got to worry about inflation caused by this huge debt. So what's he doing right now? He's dealing with deflation, which is where dollars become more and more dear, more and more hard to get. And it's a weird kind of deflation because you're seeing the price of gold go up right now while the number of dollars in circulation is increasing, and yet the price of everything else is falling. It's all totally counterintuitive. Normally, when the price of things falls, that means that dollars are becoming more valuable. When the price of things increase, it means dollars are less valuable, right? There's that inverse relationship. But right now, you've got dollars, well, cash is king was the phrase from the Great Depression. It's becoming the phrase again. But this is a really, really tough one. And, you know, U.S. Treasury bills last week, Treasury yields even turned negative. This from the Lex column in today's Financial Times. The only reason anyone would choose to lose money, which is what you do if you buy treasuries right now, is because they have to, due to index rules, fiduciary obligations, or to keep their jobs. But such forced buying, says the Financial Times in the Lex column today, is a sign of another bubble. The main argument why this bubble could yet inflate further is Japan. And then they talk about how Japan had a similar situation, but Japan chose not to do what Bernanke is doing. They didn't pour money on the fire, as it were. And so they've had a recession for a decade, but they didn't slide into the Great Depression, and they are not experiencing hyperinflation. It looks like, thanks to the wise folks in the Bush administration and wise advisors from the Clinton administration like Robert Rubin and the idiots from the Reagan administration, we may experience both. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Downright strange things going on out there in the world, I'll tell you.
Maybe I'm crazy.
Now, maybe George Tenet is. He's in Prince Bandar's pool, swimming pool in Riyadh. Screaming from Jeffrey Goldberg's blog today. Screaming about the Bush administration officials who were just then trying to pin the Iraq WMD fiasco on him. This is from Patrick Tyler's forthcoming book, A World of Trouble. It's not out yet. He says, the book says, a servant appeared with a bottle. Tenet knocked back some of the scotch, then some more. They watched with concern. He drained half the bottle in a few minutes.
They're setting me up. The bastards are setting me up, Tenet said. I'm not going to take the hit.
According to one witness, he mocked the neoconservatives in the Bush administration, referring to them with exasperation as the Jews. George Tenet. Genuinely nuts. I mean, neocons, yeah, but boy, what a... Anyhow, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's on your mind today?
We've got a similar situation in Colorado right now where...
Similar to New York, you mean?
Excuse me?
Similar to New York State with the open Senate.
We've got where we have our senator is apparently going to be appointed as Interior Secretary.
Right.
And what we've got is we've got probably one of the best candidates I've come across in years, Mike Miles, who we are all pushing for now to become senator. He is totally an outsider, but he's got the best experience I've seen to qualify him. Mm-hmm. And if you give me just a moment, I can tell people a little bit about him and just hope the Coloradans push for him.
Yeah.
Is he's a great progressive. He's got great experience. A great person. He's African American. He is a Marine Company commander, an Army Ranger. He is the acting superintendent of schools right now. He's already been vetted. He is a foreign diplomat with the State Department with an above top secret clearance. And what was interesting is in 2004 when he ran against Salazar, I was there at the convention and people were had Salazar signs up. And then Miles came up and spoke, and these people in the audience, everyone around me changed to Miles.
Wow.
Changed their vote. Just hearing him, he's so inspirational. And the interesting thing is he almost kept Salazar off the ballot. With the convention, he beat Salazar clearly.
Yeah.
And so he's already proved himself with the voters and everything. And he was right on every progressive issue I can think of. He was very against the Iraq invasion, was showing up at the protests and speaking.
Yeah. Well, and this is where, with regard to Caroline Kennedy, and I'm not, this isn't some kind of rousing endorsement on my part. It's a, you know, I'm mm-hmm. pleased to give her a chance, which is a little short of that. But the point is that she enthusiastically and heartily supported Barack Obama's candidacy. And in that, essentially was saying these positions, the positions on which he ran, which hopefully will be the positions on which he governs. Time will tell. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the case with Bill Clinton. But the positions on which he ran are the positions that she's endorsing. And if that's the case, then I think she'd make a great senator. Jeff, I've got to move along, but thanks for the heads up on
Mr.
Miles.
Tell people to contact Governor Ritter and Mike Miles for Senate.
Great. Mike Miles for Senate in Colorado.
Contact the governor.
There you go. Thank you. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, listening to WTKG. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Happy holidays, Tom.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Caught you on one of the cable shows last Friday. Glad to see you there.
Thank you.
Did a good job. I forget which one it was.
It was Countdown.
Yeah, I think Schuster was filling in.
Yeah, David Schuster was filling in for Keith Olbermann. Yeah.
At any rate, I wanted to weigh in on this Caroline Kennedy thing. You know, as you've indicated, she's done some things in the private sector. And if you really look at it objectively, granted, there may be some opposition from Hillary herself. And I have to say, in all honesty, I don't know who the other candidates would be. But if you look at what Caroline has done in the private sector, it's probably equal to, except for the fact she wasn't first lady, as what Hillary had. I mean, after all, when Hillary ran for the Senate, she had never run before for any public office. And, of course, that was an election. This would be an appointment. But as you said, the rules are, assuming that the governor of the state of New York, in this case, Governor Patterson, I believe,
yes,
would exercise good judgment and appoint a decent person. And I'm like you, you know, there may be more qualified people, but I don't think you can just rule her out and say, oh, she's just a Kennedy, she's just a celebrity.
Yeah, I well said, Rick. And we'll, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. But, you know, my mind is open on it. Absolutely. And the idea of somebody who's not an insider. Now, people say, oh, she's the ultimate insider. Her dad was president. Yeah, but you know, she hasn't been playing the game of politics all these years. She hasn't accumulated thousands of debts to other people in exchange for votes or in exchange for campaign contributions, et cetera, et cetera. And that Mr. Smith goes to Washington quality, that obviously she's not an everyman, as it were, you know, the average working person. She was born under exceptional circumstances. But nonetheless, that outsider quality is something that I find fascinating. And New York has always, New Yorkers have always loved the idea of, you know, larger than life people. This is the seat that her uncle, Robert Kennedy, held. This is the seat that Hillary Clinton went into after being first lady. And arguably neither Robert Kennedy nor Hillary Clinton were, arguably they were both carpetbaggers. Caroline has at least lived in New York for the last 30 years or so. J.R. in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, J.R.
Good morning. I don't think that her name should be held against her, but I don't think that it should also work in her favor. I think that what New Yorkers really need is somebody that, I mean, they have a perfect opportunity right now to put somebody in that may not be electable because of, you know, popularity, but is a prime candidate to really do a good job for New York. Now, she might fill that position, but I think that maybe, you know, she should start out at a state level and work her way up.
But see, we can't, as her nephew Patrick has done, but J.R., we can't ignore the value. I mean, there's a real equity in that name, for better or for worse. You can call it America's royalty. You can rail about it all day long, but it's real. It's bankable. I mean, you know, she could do things and convert that name into cash. There's political capital associated with that name as well, and considerable political capital. And hopefully it will be used, can be used, and would be used for good. And that's, you know, that's my hope. So I don't think that we can, you know, whether it should be used against her or used for her, I don't think that you can ignore the fact that it's there and it's real and we just can't get around it. Tim in Detroit. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Happy Yule logs for everybody.
Well, thank you. And the same to
you. Okay. I wanted to talk about the economy, actually.
I think it's really the most important issue of the day, frankly.
It really is. And whoever Patterson appoints, I'm sure they'll be a good progressive. My point is, however, that we, you know, monetary policy, in my judgment, is absolutely cannot get us out of this. We have to go back to a New Deal, a Roosevelt economy. We have to have a manufacturing-based economy. The stimulus package has to have money for jobs, good, decent, American-paying jobs.
And we need to change, Tim, and we need to change our trade policy.
Absolutely.
I'm telling you, go read Alexander Hamilton's writings over at commondreams.org, the op-ed that I put up there today. Hamilton had it nailed. Hamilton figured it out. We adopted his policies in 1792, and they stood until Ronald Reagan became president. And Reagan began the deconstruction of the American middle class, the destruction of American manufacturing. George Herbert Walker Bush amped it up even more with his free trade policies. Bill Clinton put it on steroids with NAFTA, the WTO, and GATT. And now George Jr. is trying to extend it to Colombia and Peru and every place else in the world that he possibly can. And what it has done is destroyed American jobs, the American industrial industry.
You know, Tom, every country in the world has solid tariffs, and it makes sense because of the economy. You have to protect your industries. I mean, protectionism is a good thing. If you don't protect your industries, you're going to lower the labor costs. The corporations will take their jobs where they lower the labor costs. That just makes corporate sense. So we got to protect our industries, and we got to revitalize the auto industry. We've got to mandate that the auto companies produce automobiles that actually work. You know, they run on batteries, they run on hydrogen, they run on biofuels.
Well, we need to get off of oil, because the only reason that oil is a strategic resource is because over 95% of our transportation infrastructure runs on oil, and in
Absolutely.
Many other countries, much of it runs on electricity, and that's what we need to get to the point where it's mostly electricity, because we only produce 2% of our electricity in this country from oil. And so, you know, that would break the back of the oil monopoly. Tim, well said. Jeff in Austin, Texas. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Tom. Happy holidays to you.
Thank you, and to
it
you,
was
too.
Good to see you on MSNBC, finally. It's about time they have somebody really good on.
It's a good show.
I was wanting to talk to you about the Kennedy thing. It was so refreshing to hear you say what you said at the onset of your program. When I first heard that her name was up for it, I thought, oh, well, you know, good, give her a shot. Let's see what happens. I don't really have a thought one way or the other. But this whole thing about when I start hearing people vetting people based on experience, the next thing I start thinking of is, wasn't this country founded on regular everyday people? And I know a Kennedy is far from a regular everyday people. But
well, so was Washington and Jefferson. They were large plantation owners.
Absolutely. And let's take a look at what we've done in the past with Dick Cheney. That person is heavily into the industry, and I think a lot of our foreign policy was dictated.
And he was very experienced. He worked in the Nixon White House.
Absolutely. You know, Tom DeLay, Jim Wright, Phil Graham, Newt Gingrich, Trent Lott. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Wouldn't it be nice? Isn't it just refreshing? Can we finally see what happens when we give somebody who doesn't have, you know, it's a government for the people, by the people, not for business, by business. Let's give somebody else a shot. And let's determine in 2 years, and if the people of New York don't like her in 2 years, then they'll vote somebody else in.
Yeah.
But
she'll
have
a chance to prove herself, and it's just going to be that simple. You know,
absolutely.
This is a huge assumption here, and that is that she would be the appointee. But
I think
increasingly it's looking that way.
It's time this country starts going back and re-looking over what it takes to be a senator. And maybe it just takes somebody who, you know, has some amount of an education. But, you know, let's get away from this connections with business and – you know, these inside connections. Let's get away.
Yeah, the so-called experience, which really just means, you know, part of the old boy network more often than not. Jeff, well said. Thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour. Hey, Medea Benjamin is going to drop by right after the break. She's the co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, CodePinkAlert.org. They've got some plans for shoes that you need to know about. What a surprise. 45 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman program.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
The International Brotherhood of Teamsters is leading the fight for fair trade, universal health care, and a stronger middle class. The Teamsters Union and organized labor is America's best anti-poverty program, bringing millions of hardworking men and women into the middle class. For over 100 years, the Teamsters Union has been the champion of the working class in the United States. Today, America's middle class needs the Teamsters like never before. Join in the fight for a strong middle class and a stronger America. Visit Teamster.org for more information.
At Ace, people are lining up to talk to our Santa's helpers for last-minute gifts.
Hi, I always wait till the last minute to do my Christmas shopping. It's more exciting.
No problem. Try an Ace gift card or choose from 14 great gifts like tool sets from Ace or DeWalt for just $9.99 each. Plus, get double points on your Ace Rewards card.
Cool.
Now through Monday at Ace, the holiday helpful place. Sale prices good at participating Ace hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog, what name it could be.
Promise, because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9. AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
Life is made up of little moments. I don't want to miss any of them.
Jump rope with me, Grandma?
Yes, Advil. It's the answer I've found to keep pain from standing in my way. Yes, Advil. I used to take different pain relievers for joint pain, backaches, muscle pain. Now, Advil is my every pain reliever, no matter where I hurt. Nothing works better. Nothing works on more pains.
Double Dutch?
Yes, Advil. My every pain reliever.
Among OTC pain relievers, use as directed.
This is the Mortgage Moment, and I'm here with Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity Mortgage. Hayes, the economy's a mess. Do you have any positive financial news?
Definitely. Thanks to Uncle Sam's bold action, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive. As low as, are you ready for this?
What?
5.25% with an APR of 5.5. These are the lowest rates we've seen all year.
Yeah, but will this really kickstart the economy?
The Fed didn't mince words. Their explicit goal is to push mortgage rates down to a level that stimulates home buying and refinancing activity.
So who will this truly help?
Listen, virtually every homeowner can save money with rates as low as 5.25% and an APR of 5.5. So pull the trigger and lock in right now, because these rates could be gone in the blink of an eye. At a time when you need it most, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money. So make one simple call to 718-1000 today. 503-718-1000.
License number ML3256.
IBM Express Advantage.
Yes, I'm editor-in-chief at PsychoTour Magazine. A rival publication has had some trouble.
Oh?
The store knocked their systems completely out. I can't wait to welcome their readers into our highly secure tech-savvy embrace.
So you know about IBM Remote Data Protection Express?
We've got it. One of your business partners helped us get automatic data protection for all our servers and PCs.
Which is why the storm didn't affect you.
A completely managed off-site backup service with 24/7 monitoring.
So you can focus on content, not IT.
We don't have to worry about our articles and customer information staying safe as we welcome Electropolis subscribers.
So
I'm calling for more.
You know, we could help them too.
Let's not.
Ooh, you're ruthless.
Thank you.
IBM Remote Data Protection Express helps mid-sized companies protect their critical data, and it's less than $3 a month per gigabyte. Go to ibm.com/ibm access or call the concierge at 877-IBM-ACCESS to find the business partner that's right for you. Prices are subject to change by IBM without notice.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Drinking too much eggnog, and we begged her not to go, but she forgot her medication, and she staggered out the door into the snow. When we found her Christmas morning at the scene of the attack,
the grief,
she had hoof prints on her forehead, and and incriminating claws marks on her back. Grandma got run over by a reindeer.
Well, let's hope that was the rare anomaly. Welcome back. 9 and a half minutes, 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Medea Benjamin on the line with us, the co-founder of both Code Pink and Global Exchange. CodePinkAlert.org is their website. Medea, welcome.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you here with us. Now, we have this shoe-throwing journalist in Iraq, Muntadir El-Zaidi, and I think now all across America, people know something that most Americans didn't know, I think, probably 2 weeks ago, which is that the ultimate insult in the Muslim world for a billion people or more, the ultimate insult in the world is not a pie in the face or a sack of doggy doo in the front yard or whatever. It's in the front door that's set on fire or whatever. That may, I guess those are more the category of jokes even than insults, but that the ultimate insult is a shoe.
That's right.
And you guys are going to take that a step farther.
Well, we just did. In fact, we just finished our action at the White House where we did a couple of things, Tom. We set up a memorial to the Iraqis who have died with shoes that had tags on them representing women, children, innocent Iraqis, obviously just a small portion of the over 1 million Iraqis who have died, to pay tribute and use the quote of Muqtadir El-Zaidi, who said, for the orphans and the widows and those who have died in Iraq. And then separately, on a lighter note, we had a George Bush lookalike with a big papier-mâché head, and we had a shoe-throwing contest.
That's great. Were there winners and losers, or was it just all in good fun?
George Bush was a loser each time around.
Yeah.
We even had some press who did the honors of taking a shoe and throwing out one at him as well. And we, of course, called for the release of El-Zaidi because
yes.
We all saw how he got beat to the ground, but he has not appeared before the court yet, and we're calling, as many around the world are doing, for him to be released without charges.
Now, the news stories I'm hearing is that he's actually been moved to a hospital, that his injuries are so bad. He's got broken ribs, internal injuries, broken bones, broken hand, as I recall.
That's right. And we talked to the Iraqi ambassador to the United States yesterday, and he said he's lucky he didn't do this under Saddam. And we said, yeah, he's lucky the whole world is watching, because you might have beat him even worse and then whisked him off to one of those prisons where you don't see the light of day for, you know, who knows how long and don't get any due process.
Well, the irony is that when he says he's lucky he didn't do this under Saddam, probably he doesn't realize he's comparing George Bush to Saddam Hussein.
Well, that's right. That's another apt comparison at this point in
perhaps,
terms of responsible
perhaps.
Mass murder.
Medea Benjamin, she's the co-founder of Code Pink and Global Exchange, CodePinkAlert.org, the website. Medea, on a more serious note, you just returned from Iran.
That's right. Just came back last week.
Can you tell us your sense of that country and the situation right now from the Iranian point of view of America and that country?
Well, they continue to be very concerned about U.S. policy. They were, many of them, happy to see Obama elected, but then they got very concerned when they heard who he was appointing. They looked very closely at his appointments and see that they're people who have a lot of the same rhetoric as people under the Bush administration. In fact, some of them even worse. One of the close advisors to Obama is Dennis Ross, who I see in the Washington Post yesterday was being talked about as a possible special envoy to Iran, which would be crazy because Dennis Ross has said that George Bush didn't do enough to put the economic screws on Iran.
Do you think it's possible, Medea, that some of these folks might get religion? That, you know, that redemption? Can we believe in redemption? Can we? Is it possible that people who have been part of the political structure and have gone along with toxic policies in the past might reform? Or are you concerned that the Obama administration is going to continue down that we need to have a boogeyman road? I'm very concerned about Afghanistan in this regard as well.
Yeah, well, I think definitely Afghanistan. In the case of Iran, you know, I'm somewhat optimistic, only because so many people in the military have come out and said, you know, this would be insane to attack Iran. It's a huge country with a huge military, and our military is stretched beyond its capacity right now. And so that's the only thing that really keeps me hopeful about the U.S. not doing something crazy like attacking Iran.
Yeah. Broadly, we have just a minute left here, Medea. What's Code Pink up to these days?
Well, we're obviously very flexible, Tom. We weren't planning on being outside the White House with a bunch of shoes, but we put that together in 2 days' time.
Yeah.
We do have a very exciting project that we're doing about Iran. We had a chance to visit a wind factory when we were in Iran, and unfortunately, because the Bush administration pressure, one of the companies, the European company called Vestas, that was working with the Iranian wind company has stopped supplying them with parts that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And we are taking that cause on, not only pressuring the European company to supply the to fulfill its obligations under the contract it signed, but we're also buying shares in the wind company ourselves.
Oh, that's great. Vesta is a Danish company, but they also have operations in the United States. In fact, they're building a factory here in Oregon. So good luck with that. Medea Benjamin, codepinkalert.org, the website. Thanks, Medea.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Great to have you on, and keep up the great work. Coming up next, Dinesh D'Souza. What's so great about Christianity? We'll find out.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Well, it's the holiday season. The holidays being a contraction for holy days. The arguably two largest religions in the United States, Christianity and Judaism, having holy days, although I don't know if Islam has a holy day right around this time or not. There are others. Obviously, there's the maybe paganism is one of the major religions in the United States. Certainly, that's where at least the most of the Christian traditions originated, the Yule log and the tree and the lights and all that kind of stuff, as a end of the winter. Well, the coming up on the winter solstice, the end of winter, the beginning of the days getting longer and longer after December 24th. Dinesh D'Souza is on the line with us. Dinesh's latest book, What's So Great About Christianity, and his bestseller, The Enemy at Home, just out in paperback. Dinesh D'Souza, DineshDSouza.com, his website. Dinesh, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be on the show.
I'm going to, in our conversation, take the opposite position that I typically take. More often than not, I'm on here telling atheists that I think that agnosticism is an honorable and rational tradition and position, and that atheism very often is actually just another religion. I'm going to flip that around and defend atheism today, because you're coming out and trashing atheists pretty aggressively.
Giving them a well-deserved thrashing, you're right.
Yeah.
Right. That'll be fun. Do that.
I don't know what you want to call it. As a believer myself of some sort, as somebody who identifies himself as a Christian anyway, I'm going to defend atheism. I don't get it why, in your piece here, Run, Peter Singer, Run, and, you know, based on your debate with Peter Singer, who was arguing atheism, you say that he wasn't able to handle this thing, and then you invoke Hitler, of all things, And you say the Nazis favored state-sponsored genocide while Singer advocated free market homicide. I would point out to you, Dinesh D'Souza, that the Nazis were officially religious. They were officially Christian. You had Archbishop Mueller, who was appointed by Adolf Hitler himself, who committed suicide about a week after the war ended. The Nazis, you know, Gott mit uns was on the belt buckle of the German soldiers. God is with us. It was all about Christianity, the Nazis.
Well, I don't think that's right. Well, here, let me tell you.
It is right.
It's true.
I lived in Germany for a year. I speak German. I've read the history of this country. I wrote a book on the history of the religion of Hitler. Yeah, it's true.
Look, you should read Richard Evans, the historian Richard Evans has a multi-volume history of the Third Reich. And he lays this all out pretty well. He points out that, for example, before Hitler came to power, he did court the churches. And some of the quotations you find on atheist websites, Hitler says things like, you know, in fighting the Jews, I'm doing the Lord's work. He was trying to win over the Bavarian Catholics and the Lutherans, Lutheran Protestants. But Evans points out that this effort really failed. I mean, there were some clergy that tried to compromise with him, but the churches really turned against Hitler, and Hitler then had an organized plan to destroy the churches in Germany.
That was about competition. He was still promoting Christianity. The churches that he was destroying were those who were not part of the official German state church. And I suggest you Google this. You'll find all the photos right up to months before the end of the war of Adolf Hitler and Bishop Mueller, Bishop Mueller conducting services, Bishop Mueller doing Archbishop Mueller conducting ceremonies. The SS was right in the forefront of all this stuff. It was as much a religious organization as it was.
Have you heard of a book called Hitler's Table Talk? Hitler's Table Talk is a book that was assembled by Boring. While Hitler was in the height of his power, Boring assigned a Nazi commandant to make a record of Hitler's private views and conversations so that history would remember this, quote, great man. And there's a book that's about 400 pages long, a very detailed and extremely revealing, the closest you get to Hitler's actual opinions.
But that's
and
just book, private stuff, Dinesh, and that's my
no,
whole
but
point.
What I'm saying,
demagogues
say
use
private,
religion.
That's his real views. Because in Mein Kampf, Hitler says propaganda can be used for every purpose. It's okay to lie to win over a group. But what I'm saying is his private views are relevant because that tells you what he really wanted to achieve.
No, it tells you what he really thought, what he was trying to achieve. He saw the churches as competition for his power, and therefore
That's
right. he started his own church. It had, but you know, the point is that in his public rhetoric, he was using religion as one of the main tools that he was using to promote his own power and to promote
I think that there's a complex issue. Here's what I want to say. I think Hitler was doing really, first of all, he was appealing equally to Nordic legends and old Germanic myths.
The SS. I mean, if we're doing dueling book recommendations, let me recommend to you, and I think you'll find this fascinating, Hitler Black Magician, which is a
right.
brilliant
all
book
right.
about that whole dimension of the religion that Hitler was bringing into, particularly into the SS. When Scott Berg and I were writing a book on this, we visited the old SS ceremony in Wavelsburg, which was going to be his Vatican. He was building a Vatican that was going to be there for the thousand years of peace.
He was building a Vatican very different than the real Vatican. In other words, he was creating, if you will, a Nazi Christ. You
but
know?
He was calling it Christian. Cemetery in Wavelsburg that Scott and I visited just 8 years ago is still, every tombstone is polished. There's still flowers on the graves every day. The nearby town is all descendants of the SS. I mean, there was one house with skulls embedded around the door frame.
We actually got run out
of that town.
We're moving a little closer together here. Hitler knew that he was living in a largely Christian country, so he had to appropriate Christian symbolism.
But that's my point.
In the same way that in communist countries, viciously anti-Christian regimes have sometimes used the trappings or even the symbolism of Christianity against the church. So to pretend like this is Christianity is kind of to miss the strategic and propagandistic point that these people are trying to. It's like falling for what Hitler was trying to promote.
No, Dinesh D'Souza, the propaganda point here is that demagogues throughout history, and I defy you to find an exception, actually, Demagogues throughout history have used, well, actually, you could argue, you know, Mao Zedong, I suppose. But,
Pol Pot, Stalin, Enver Hoxha, Fidel Castro.
But see, I would say that those guys raised their own state atheism to a religion as well. Demagogues throughout history have used religion, that is a specific belief set, as a way of not just augmenting, but maintaining and promoting their own power. And in that regard, organized religion can be, and in many cases is, very toxic.
But does Christianity have to answer not only for the crimes of Christianity, but also for the crimes of atheism, just because atheism, quote, resembled Christianity?
What I'm suggesting is that any religion that is used by a state is a danger.
Well, I agree. In that sense, I don't support state-sponsored religion. That's certainly true.
I'm not even talking about sponsor.
Let's come back to Singer for a moment. The reason I made the Nazi connection, I'm not in the habit of accusing people of being Nazis, by the way. The reason I made the connection is Singer himself points out that he is virtually banned from speaking in Germany, that the sensitivities to the Holocaust in Germany have resulted in the fact that every time he's invited to speak, his conferences are canceled, there are huge demonstrations, because it is true that some of the things that Singer says, he says in such an incendiary way that you get the idea that he's perfectly okay with not state-sponsored.
Yeah, but let's, Dinesh, respectfully, let's not debate Peter Singer. Most of our listeners don't even know who he is.
Right.
The topic of your debate with him was, can we have morality without God?
Right.
And I would submit to you that the concept of God in all its various forms, and gods as well, let's acknowledge polytheistic religions like Hinduism and animism, that the concept of an anthropomorphic creator being is the and with a set of rules for morality is the consequence of society figuring out appropriate rules for the survival of humans. In other words, God didn't start morality; God followed morality. The concept of God followed morality. That morality starts minus religion, absent religion, and then morality informs religion. And the proof of that is if you look at, you know, King David had 700 wives, and today we consider that immoral.
I mean, do you think that that is actually a proof of the point you just made? In other words,
yes, that religion over time reflects the morality of culture, not the other way around.
If you had secular cultures throughout the world that had morality for many centuries and eventually came up with an idea of God, you could cite that and say, look, here are some cultures that had morality.
I would submit to you that we do.
Let me finish. Later, they superimposed a theological foundation. The truth is almost exactly the opposite. Every known culture from the dawn of man has forms of worship. Even if you go to the ancient cave paintings, you see man prostrating himself before some divinity. The Aztecs, for example.
Absolutely. And I'm saying that those people endowed those divinities with their own moral values, not the other way around.
That's a different point now. I mean, now you're saying that man has created God in man's image, a point that Feuerbach makes. And look,
that's exactly what I'm saying. Dinesh, we got to take a break. Let's pick this up on the other side of the break. We're talking with Dinesh D'Souza, DineshDSouza.com, his website. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Ed Schultz.
The biggest story on the face of this earth is America. What do you really think of your workers?
Noon to 3.
The partisan divide is alive and well. The attack on the working folk of America is now in full gear. What's the difference between the governor of Illinois selling off a Senate seat,
the Ed Schultz Show,
and some southern Republican senator protecting his backside for the next election?
Noon to 3.
By cutting the head off American auto manufacturer.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Brenda and I have been married 38 years this month.
I knew he was the one the first time I laid eyes on him.
At our age, we needed a health plan that expands our Medicare coverage, one that's flexible, personalized, and affordable.
That's why we chose a My Advantage plan from Atrio.
This is Dr. John Weston, one of the many doctors, specialists, and hospitals behind Atrio. We created Atrio to give you more benefits and coverage, access to more doctors and hospitals in our area, and coverage when you travel, and plans with no monthly premiums and copays as low as $10. So call Atrio and have them design a My Advantage plan just for you.
We knew Atrio was the one the first time we talked to him.
Atrio Health Plans is a coordinated care plan with a Medicare Advantage contract, expanding health coverage for residents in Washington County. To find the My Advantage plan for you, call toll-free 1-877-672-8686. That's 1-877-672-8686. Or go to atriohp.com. Affordable, comprehensive, reliable. That's Atrio.
At Ace, people are lining up to talk to our Santa's helpers for last-minute gifts.
Hi, I always wait till the last minute to do my Christmas shopping. It's more exciting.
No problem. Try an Ace gift card or choose from 14 great gifts like tool sets from Ace or DeWalt for just $9.99 each. Plus, get double points on your Ace Rewards card.
Cool.
Now through Monday at Ace, the holiday helpful place. Sale price is good at participating Ace hardware stores while supplies last. See store for details.
This holiday season, gift smarter with Office Depot and give the gifts they really want. Office Depot has the hottest technology and the coolest gifts, like the HP DeskJet F4280 all-in-one printer for only $54.99. Or make the smart choice with the Canon PowerShot SD1100IS digital camera for only $149.99. Plus, find smart deals on laptops, GPS systems, HDTVs, and more. So hurry in today. Office Depot, taking care of business. Offers expire 12/17/08.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Stumped for gift ideas? Give the gift of style and safety. A Les Schwab Tire Center's gift certificate. Tires, wheels, batteries, for whatever you drive. Les Schwab gift certificates, only at Les Schwab.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station. AM 620 KPOJ.
Okay, so which came first, morality or religion? For that matter, which came first, Christianity or English common law? This was an assertion that, for example, Patrick Henry was making back at the founding of this country, that England was based in Christianity, and there's the simple fact is it's not the case. In a February 10th, 1814 letter to Dr. Thomas Cooper, Thomas Jefferson addressed this question. He said, "Finally, in answer to Fortescue's Allen's question about why the Ten Commandments should not now be considered part of the common law of England, we may say that they are not now because they never were. Anybody who asserts that the Ten Commandments are the basis of American or British law is mistakenly believing a manifest forgery." Sir Matthew Hale lays it down in these words, wrote Jefferson, "Christianity is a parcel of the laws of England." But it couldn't be. Christianity was not introduced till the 7th century. I'm quoting Thomas Jefferson now. "But Christianity was not introduced till the 7th century, the conversion of the first Christian king of the Heptarchy having taken place about the year 598 and the last of 686. Here, then, is a space of 200 years during which the common law was in existence and Christianity no part of it. We might as well say that the Newtonian system of philosophy is a part of the common law as that the Christian religion is," wrote Jefferson. "In truth, the alliance between church and state in England has ever made their judges accomplices in the frauds of the clergy and even bolder than they are." Dinesh D'Souza, your response.
Well, yes, and, you know, but this is the same Jefferson as well, who sat down. And I agree, Jefferson among the founders was perhaps one of the more, certainly one of the most unorthodox. I wouldn't call him, he was certainly not an atheist, but he was probably less devout than most of the other founders. But even Jefferson, when
he was a deist.
Pardon me?
He was a deist.
I just said that. But my point is, when he sat down to write down where our unalienable rights come from, okay? Now, he could have said 10 different things. They come from social contract. They come from John Locke. They come from here. They come from there. But he could think of only one source of the rights, and that was our creator. Now, why did Jefferson...
Now, wait a second here. Who was it that he said our rights... Where was it he said our rights came from?
All men are created equal and endowed by our creator with certain inalienable rights. So why is the creator listed as the source of rights when, according to you, rights come from secular sources?
Well, you'll find... Well, first of all, because it was simply the popular use of the term at the time. Twice, though,
Excuse
in the Declaration
me?
Of
Independence...
It was the...
You're saying Jefferson just...
It was politically expedient, but no, let me finish my sentence here, Dinesh. Twice in the Declaration of Independence, Jefferson refers to nature's laws and nature's God. And John Adams, in the first draft of that, crossed out nature's and wrote the Christian God. And Jefferson took it back and crossed that out and said, no, I'm talking about nature's God. He was more of an animist than he was anything else, I would argue. And in fact, I mean, you know, people say his statement that, you know, I've sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of men proves that he was a Bible-thumping believer.
No. I don't think he was. But look, let me say this. I think that there was a debate that was going on within the Enlightenment between what you could call the God of nature and the God of Scripture. And what I mean by this is it's a debate about whether God can be discovered through reason or whether God is simply a product of revelation. And I think Jefferson basically felt that by looking at nature, one could infer through reason the existence of a creator. That's what he meant by nature's God. You can see God.
Right. That's why he was a deist. He believed there was something out there, but he had no idea what it was. It's why when he took the New Testament and with a razor blade cut out all of the miracles and then reassembled the first four Gospels of the New Testament and published it as the Jefferson Bible, and it's still in print today without a single miracle in it.
That's right. Jefferson favored, if you will, the idea of a reasonable God who doesn't violate the natural course of nature. But here's the point. When I'm talking about morality and God, I'm not saying which came first, the chicken or the egg. I'm simply saying this. Is it possible to explain morality in purely secular terms? I mean, think
yes.
of it this way. If we are Darwinian primates, okay, evolved and essentially programmed by our genes to survive and reproduce, and you might say get on in the world, why would we evolve a set of codes and commandments that often work against our self-interest?
Because it works to the best interest. There's a very simple answer to that, and you can see this
in any kind of animal.
Because it works to the best interest of the survival of the species as a whole.
Okay, but that is what in evolutionary biology is called a fallacy. Because
it's not a fallacy.
I'll tell you why it's a fallacy. Richard Dawkins, the arch atheist.
Dawkins is wrong on so many things. His Selfish Gene book has been so easily debunked.
But he is right to this degree. Because, see, if you say for the good of the community, you're presuming the existence of the morality you're seeking to explain in the first place.
No, you're presuming the necessity of the community.
But whether it's necessary for the community, why should the individual go along with it?
See, because it's necessary to the individual's survival.
No. But the individual can free ride on the welfare of the community. See, if everybody...
But see, individuals don't. I mean, even look at the study that just came out a week ago about dogs, where they found that they trained dogs to shake when somebody said shake, and they shake hands. And then they had two dogs side by side, and one of them got a reward every time it shook hands, and the other one didn't. The one who didn't, very quickly, started acting very sullen and refusing to shake. Dogs understand fairness.
Look,
I'm telling you, they don't believe in God.
The point I'm trying to make is that when you say that we are evolved with group sentiments, I mean, look, we survive as individuals.
No,
right?
We don't.
No, we don't.
I could not have survived if my mother and father did not raise me. I could not have survived if my community hadn't educated me. We are social animals, Dinesh D'Souza.
I realize that, but my point is that itself requires some explanation. It does not have... We don't see this behavior in the animal kingdom, your dog anecdote notwithstanding.
Actually, I would submit to you that we see it right across it. You'll find an entire chapter about it in my book, What Would Jefferson Do? But let me plug your website and thank you for being with us. DineshD'Souza.com is website. Dinesh, thanks for dropping by.
Hey, it's a pleasure always.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Fred 42 shares back to me a quote that I shared with you back when I was in Vermont that actually I got from Tom in Minneapolis, which is from John Kenneth Galbraith, which I'm going to make our quote for the day. The modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy. That is, the search for a superior moral justification for selfishness. A good one. By the way, strange news out there. Burger King is rolling out a new product. No, it's not. It's not a new food. It's actually a men's body spray called Flame. $4 a bottle. It contains, and I'm quoting from their ad, the scent of seduction with a hint of flame broiled meat. Yeah, Christmas is just around the corner. And who are you trying to attract with this? I don't know. Let me just, I just want to wrap this whole thing up with this quote from Jefferson, and then we'll pick up your phone calls here on this topic. Thomas Jefferson is so often quoted by right-wingers and fundamentalists as being a Christian or a believer, when in fact he was not. He was a deist. The deist basically said, you know, there's something out there. There's some kind of magic in the world, but we have no idea what it is. It may be monotheistic, it may be a single thing, it may be polytheistic, it may be a lot of things, it may be animistic, it may be imbued in everything. We don't know. That's the deist position, essentially. And that's what, you know, Benjamin Rush, who was a physician and one of Thomas Jefferson's very best friends, closest friends, Ben Franklin, many of the founders were deists, openly. And so 2 months before the election of 1800, this is Thomas Jefferson is vice president under the man he hated at that time, John Adams, who he felt was turning America into a fascistic country. My word, not his. The word didn't exist at the time. Mussolini invented it. But with the Alien and Sedition Acts, he was horrified. He was in a hard-fought campaign. Adams had, you know, had hired people to publicize the story of Jefferson and Sally Hemings and whatnot. And it was a mudslinging, incredible. And in the midst of this, Adams, who was, as I recall, a Presbyterian, was accusing Jefferson of not being a good Christian. And so here, 2 months before the election, Jefferson writes this letter to his best friend, Benjamin Rush, and he prefaces it by saying, please don't share this with anybody because we've got this election coming up. Dear sir, I promised you a letter on Christianity, which I have not forgotten. I don't know how it would reconcile the genus Irritabile Vetum, that's the angry priests, who are all in arms against me. Their hostility is on too interesting a ground to be softened. Their delusion on the clause of the Constitution, he's talking about the First Amendment here, their delusion on the clause of the Constitution, which while it secured the freedom of the press, covered also the freedom of religion, has given to our clergy a very favorite hope of obtaining an establishment of a particular form of Christianity throughout the United States. And as every sect believes its own form to be the one true one, everyone perhaps hoped for his own, but especially the Episcopalians and the Congregationalists. The returning good sense of our country, and he's speaking of the probability that he himself will be elected as he was as president, the returning good sense of our country threatens abortion to their hopes. And the preachers believe that any portion of power confided in me, such as being elected president, will be exerted in opposition to their schemes. And they believe rightly,
For I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. But this is all they have to fear from me, and in their opinion, it is enough. Thomas Jefferson, 1800. 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Sean in Santa Monica. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom, that was an amazing quote. Boy, I'm still stunned by it. But I want to talk about your last guest. You know, I studied evolutionary biology throughout the 90s, and I interned at the American Museum of Natural History in the Vertebrate Paleontology Department. And, you know, I think he paid a lot of lip service to evolutionary theory. He seemed to, you know, he had a passing understanding of it. The greater good. But that really is what we exist for as individuals. We like to think of ourselves as beings with free will, but we do in a conscious sense, but in an unconscious sense, we all exist for the whole. You know, we are pre-programmed, whether it's human beings, the animal kingdom, the plant kingdom. We don't know why, and this may be our God, but we're all pre-programmed to propagate the species no matter what. And we subvert our individual need to have morality, if you want to call it that, to propagate that species.
Right, and this was the... Go ahead.
I'm sorry, it just so happens that morality fits into that mold.
Because
the moral is to do unto others as we have to do unto ourselves.
Exactly. And this is where Richard Dawkins got it wrong in his book, The Selfish Gene, which I read about a decade ago when the thing came out, and has been, you know, well debunked in the years since then to a large extent. You know, he is right. We are gene-propagating machines, as are all living organisms. But basically, it's been used to rationalize conservative economics and conservative philosophy to say it's all about the individual. And it's not. It's all about the society. And then you get the Ayn Rand folks and the libertarians who say there's no such thing as society. Yes, there is. It is larger than the individual. Sean, I'm sorry, your phone is going nuts. I got to move along. But you're so right, Sean, and thank you very much for sharing that with us. And that was the story that I was talking about in What Would Jefferson Do? Is the story of the Red Deer. And I'm not going to repeat the whole thing here. I've done it enough times. Most of you have probably heard it. But the fact of the matter is that democracy is the natural state of things for animals. Forget humans. I mean, you know, we are animals, too, but non-human animals as well. In this case, it was red deer at the University of Sussex. It's the natural state of things. And altruism is the natural state of things and will almost always trump individualism. Except in the minds of sociopaths, economists, and a few conservatives. And I'm not trying to put Dinesh D'Souza in any of those categories. He's an articulate guy, and he's not here to defend himself. But that's what's, in my opinion, that's what's so. Weldon in Minneapolis. Hey, Weldon.
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
Just wanted to make a quick comment that I really don't think that you can talk about Christianity and fascism being all that separate. Because basically Christianity is fascist.
How so?
And in the New Testament, I mean, if you can attribute those words to Jesus Christ, he said, "No one comes to the Father except by me." Well, that's an absolute. And
it may be an absolute. I mean, first of all, we don't know the exact words. And secondly, we don't know the exact meaning of that. I mean, there's a variety of ways that have been interpreted. Peter Funk wrote a couple of brilliant books about this. The five Gospels, and I'm forgetting the other title, but Peter Funk and Elaine Pagels are progressive Christian historians is the wrong word, but theologians, I guess. And there's some really brilliant writing on that topic. But
yeah.
Fascism is the merger of state and corporate interests. I don't understand
how
that has anything to do with Christianity. Or are you saying that Christianity is simply hierarchical and power-based?
It's authoritarian, definitely.
Yeah, authoritarian. Okay,
no,
in many of its current incarnations, I would agree with you. But at the same time, there are so many, and Weldon, thank you for the call, there are so many people within Christianity. I mean, go back and read the writings of the mystics of Christianity. And not just Christianity, by the way. You know, Sufism, Rumi. For example, in Islam, in Judaism, the Baal Shem Tov, Menomenes, and there's no shortage. And the mystics within Christianity, you've got St. John of the Cross, Dark Night of the Soul. What an incredible book. St. Teresa of Avila, Interior Castle. The writings of Thomas Merton, who recently died. Well, it's been a couple of years ago now, I guess. The Catholic monk who just some brilliant stuff, you know, Little Flowers of Zen and other writings. Just some absolutely wonderful and important stuff out there. So I don't think that you can indict a religion. You can look, on the other hand, at some of the institutions of the religion, for example, the Jerry Falwell Church, and say, yeah, that's an authoritarian institution that may, when all is said and done, may be doing more harm than good. Mike in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Mike.
Oh, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, what you're just saying reminds me of something Gandhi said. I like your Jesus, but you're a Christian, not so much, or something like that.
Yeah.
What I really called that was that Mr. D'Souza, this idea he's promulgating that religion is necessary for the existence of morality, if I'm understanding his assertion correctly. That's what he's saying, essentially.
Yes. That's his argument.
You can show that that's empirically wrong just by looking at something like Leviticus, which there's some moral standards in there that we can, or ethical standards in there that we can all agree upon, such as, okay, murder is wrong. But we no longer accept that it's okay to sell our children into slavery or to stone them for being insolent.
Right.
And I would submit that the reason we succeeded in editing those nastier bits of the law of the hairy thunderer out of our culture is because there's a moral frame that's bigger than religion.
Right.
It was there prior to the existence of religion.
That's my point, that religion reflects the morality of the day rather than drives the morality of the day. That morality, human morality and society precede every religion. Every religion is the if you want to have a, thank you, Mike, if you want to have a snapshot of what life was like in a particular time, what the moral code of that time was as a result of the society, look at the religious writings of that day. So, and, you know, again, speaking as somebody who is not an atheist, I'm saying morality precedes religion. We don't need religion to have morality, although it can be a wonderful expression of other things.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
The hardest part of any home improvement project is finding a good quality contractor, somebody who's going to do the job right, complete it on time and within budget, and not going to hassle you. So who do you call? Who do you trust when you need a plumber, a painter, an electrician? I'll tell you who to call. Like me, call Angie's List. Before we signed up for Angie's List, we had a disaster contractor install a kitchen counter. We used Angie's List to find a handyman to show up and fix everything. They really came through for us. More than 650,000 homeowners nationwide use Angie's List for ratings and reviews on more than 300 service categories, even doctors. It's a word-of-mouth network for consumers. Angie's List is a growing collection of homeowners' real-life experiences with local service companies. Now the people who join Angie's List, they're like you. They're looking for a way to find trustworthy companies that perform high-quality work. To join Angie's List, go to AngiesList.com and eliminate the fear of hiring the wrong company. I joined Angie's List, and you should too, today at AngiesList.com. 1-888-888-LIST. 888-888-LIST.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
Didn't he look like he's used to having shoes thrown at him? I mean, seriously, didn't the president look completely comfortable with that shoe coming at his head?
Randy Rhodes.
He uses like his best cheerleader skills, and he's bobbing and weaving. And he stood there just like on 9/11 and stared into the crowd.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
You're at a podium, you dimwit. Get down.
3-6.
And in between shoes, he had that same dimwitted look on his face that he had on 9/11 when he was sitting there reading my Petco.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
What are those three little words everyone wants to hear? Free, free, free. Through Tuesday at Sleep Country's free, free, free event, you can get free gifts, free delivery, and free financing with selected mattress sets from Simmons, Sealy, Tempur-Pedic, and the Sleep Number Bed. Like free gifts? Just choose from selected mattress sets and receive free sheets, free pillows, and free pillowcases. You can also get free delivery, free setup, and free removal of your old mattress. Plus free financing for one full year. No down, no payments, and no interest when paid in full within 12 months. Don't miss hearing those three little words. The free, free, free event ends Tuesday night at 9 at Sleep Country. Guaranteed comfort, best selection, lowest price.
Sleep Country USA.
Why buy a mattress anywhere else?
Sleep Country's Free 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 event ends Tuesday. You simply can't go wrong with guaranteed low prices and a bunch of free gifts, perfect for your new mattress purchase. But you have to hurry. This event ends Tuesday night.
Did you know there's a TV and computer manufacturer headquartered right here in Portland, and they have an outlet store?
Really? In Portland?
You can get great deals on open box floor models, factory reconditioned products with warranty, and discontinued items with clearance pricing. Like a two-go Celeron laptop with Linux at the Nexus Factory Outlet, you can get one for just $299. Go to NexusFactoryOutlet.com to check it out.
NexusFactoryOutlet.com for the best deals on flat screens and computers? Thanks!
Bring the holidays home. Choose local. It's more important than ever to support our local economy. The Sustainable Business Network of Portland encourages you to choose locally owned businesses this holiday season, like Paloma Clothing, a locally owned women's clothing and accessory store located in the Hillsdale Shopping Center. When you choose locally owned businesses like Paloma Clothing, more money recirculates in our economy, more jobs are created, and you preserve the quality of our neighborhoods. For a list of locally owned businesses, go to sbnportland.org. And remember, choose local this holiday season.
Hey, Carl Wolfson from The Morning Show. As we approach the end of the year, be sure to take advantage of your health insurance plan. If you haven't been to the optometrist this year to have your vision checked, call Eyes on Broadway to schedule an appointment before your 2008 benefits expire. Many insurance plans offer generous contributions toward the purchase of contacts or eyeglasses, but if you don't use it, you'll lose it. Make an appointment today by calling 503-284-2300 or visit eyesonbroadway.com.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I took my brother to the department store. He wanted to show Santa his Christmas list. He stood in line and he shook like a leaf. He's only 5 1/2 going on 6. He said, is it really Santa Claus? Really, really Santa Claus? Is that really Santa? Really, really Santa? Is that really Santa Claus? Really, really Santa?
Hope he thinks that's Santa Claus.
I picked him up and put him on Santa's lap, and then he pulled the pillow out of his shirt. He yanked the beard right on off of his chin, and in his eyes I could see he was hurt. He said, you're not really Santa Claus, really not Santa.
Sweet. Anyhow, welcome back 9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service on the line with us from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, what's going on in the world today?
Well, Tom, I can report that the press's White House Christmas party took place last night, the last Christmas party under the Bush administration. I got to meet the president for the last time.
Now, have you talked with him or met him in person before? I'm assuming that you have, being a White House correspondent.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I've met him before, and he seems to know who I am because he gives me a look.
That, oh, there's that crazy redhead, or there's that liberal, or what? What's
the
look?
Yeah, one of those looks. One of those looks.
Okay. And that's great. And Victoria Jones, what's your take, your measure of George W. Bush? I'm curious, as a person. I mean, was he in good cheer last night? And you know, I hear that he's tremendously charming in person. And the thing that I'm reminded of every time I hear that phrase is that so is Ted Bundy.
Yes, you do hear that about Ted Bundy. He is tremendously charming in person. I asked him whether he'd been subjected to very many shoe jokes that night. Mm-hmm. And he responded that one of the journalists had said to him that the shoe thrower must be a shoony. And then he laughed, and he was very jocular and charming and pleasant, and that's the way that he is. I think that this kind of event is an ordeal for him. I don't think he likes to stand there for 4 or 5 hours and meet all the members of the press who write about him, you know, critically throughout the year.
I'm sure, and in fact, I get the sense that any kind of, you know, highly social event like that would be an ordeal for him. Very interesting. Anything else going on?
Yes, very interesting. There's a new report out. The State Department Advisory Panel is going to say that Blackwater should be dropped as the main private security contractor for American diplomats in Iraq.
Oh, that's very interesting. You know, here's something that concerns me, Victoria, and I'm curious if this has bled through into the corporate media at all. The the Bush administration has apparently gotten religion here. They're suddenly very, very enthusiastic about sharing all of their intelligence with the incoming Obama administration.
Right.
And they've embraced Obama's aides, and they're bringing them into the White House and into the Situation Room and giving them all these what do you call it when you war game something, you know, scenarios and whatnot.
Right.
And, you know, I read this article in the New York Times about this morning, and the first thought that came to mind is, my God, they're doing to Obama the same thing they did to the Senate in 2002 and to the United Nations in early 2003. They're cherry-picking information, they're trying to scare the hell out of these guys, and they're trying to inculcate them with their worldview. Now, that's just my, crazy paranoid opinion, that the Bush administration would do the exact same thing they've done in the past. But I'm curious if you're getting anybody if anybody in the mainstream media has raised questions about this, or if everybody's simply dutifully reporting on it.
I think so far people are dutifully reporting on it because they're thinking that because so many different scenarios are being given to the Obama administration in terms of what could happen. You know, suppose the Far East goes up, suppose something happens in Thailand and it has a knock-on effect in Singapore, and then something happens in Korea. It's a very bizarre scenario I just laid out there, but you never know. They're being given five different scenarios.
But see, so, I'll bet you one of the scenarios, it's sort of like, you know, three-card Monte. I'll bet you one of the scenarios that's not being given to the Obama camp is, here's what would happen if the President of the United States were to engage in aggressive diplomacy. Here's what would happen if the United States was to say to Afghanistan, you know, instead of bombing your country, we're going to start building hospitals in your country. Here's what would happen if we went into Iraq and said, you know, instead of providing you guys with guns and dropping more depleted uranium on you, we're going to start building schools. Yeah, you know, I'll bet you those scenarios are not being shared with the Obama administration.
And yet I'm quite sure that that's something that the Obama administration can figure out for itself.
Well, hopefully. But, I mean, there is this thing of groupthink. We saw this. I mean, this is the reason why Hillary Clinton voted to authorize George Bush to not necessarily to invade Iraq, but to at least to have the authority to use it as a threat. And so many other, you know, it wasn't a majority of Democrats in the House, but there was a majority of Democrats in the Senate. They went along with it. It was because of this groupthink, because they were on the receiving end of all of these I would call it indoctrination. The Bushies called it briefings and intelligence reports and things, and it scared the bejesus out of them.
You know, I read the same article in the New York Times, and it was written in such a way that it didn't give much of an impression in terms of the content of these briefings.
No, it was written laudatorily. It was written as if, isn't this great? The Bush administration is cooperating with the Obama group. But I guarantee you they're not cooperating with the Obama group. They're doing everything they can to sabotage Barack Obama. Look at the rules that yesterday they promulgated for the Environmental Protection Agency. The rules that they're trying to promote with regard to carbon dioxide, with coal. I mean, right across the board, there's 1,000 things that they're doing to sabotage and destroy everything that Barack Obama stands for and wants to do, and now all of a sudden they're going to get real friendly on foreign policy? I don't believe it for a minute.
The narrative has already been written. You could make the argument. You could make the argument that the narrative has been written that the two administrations are cooperating in a way that is unprecedented. That's the narrative that's been written.
In the area of foreign policy, but they're not in the area of, for example, environmental policy. They're not in the area of reproductive policy. They're not in the area of the mixture of church and state. I mean, all of these realms that have been the conservative anchors, they're not cooperating at all. So why would they cooperate in foreign policy? I think that they're still trying to prove that the Project for New American Century was right. You know, that Frank Gaffney was the smart guy. But I don't know. Victoria Jones, TalkRadioNews.com. Thanks, Victoria, for dropping
by.
Thank
you.
Great talking with you, as always. Coming up next, Everything You Know Is Wrong About Dog Doo-Doo? What? Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club. Providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. You know, sometimes you know what you know, and sometimes you know what you don't know, and sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and sometimes, well, as the Parsonic Theater says, everything you know is...
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
People would want... For Christmas or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa, people would want a calendar of dog poo. Dog poop. Why? Scott Brunton is with us, our Everything You Know Is Wrong guest. He's the founder of Watch Your Step Productions, the website monthlydues.com. And Scott, hey, thanks for dropping by the studio.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is a beautiful calendar. I'm holding it up for the folks who are looking at our web stream. The Monthly Dues, the 2009 Dog Poop Calendar. And this is in the top 10% of calendars selling in the United States?
Yes, it is, according to our biggest client, Calendar Club.
That's absolutely incredible. And you guys were at a trade show at the Javits Center, and where you debuted this, and you were standing next to Heidi Fleiss.
She had a booth next to us. She was promoting her Beverly Hills Madam book, and you know it was very elaborate. It was like a boudoir setting with girls in lingerie and a red light. It was very done. But you know everyone was in front of our booth. There was a, and you know, she kept shooting me these dirty looks. And I finally asked one of her bodyguards, I said, "What's with Heidi and the dirty looks she's giving me?" And he goes, "She's really pissed off that you're dog poop, that she's being stood up or by dog poop."
Now I'm seeing these beautiful pictures all over the world. Here's this beautiful snow, the kind of a waterfall and snow scene with a dog poop in it.
Yep.
And here's a beautiful lichen scene, you know, a deep forest with a little dog poop. This looks like the Columbia River.
Actually, Crater Lake National Park.
Oh, it is Crater Lake. Oh, yeah. Wow. That's beautiful with the dog poop. Here's some fairies dancing in the... You can give me a narrative about these stories.
Well, the poop fairies, they're the ones that pick up after people who don't.
Okay. Yeah. Rod Stewart's daughter somehow involved. Raising a city. These beautiful. What did you took dog poop all around the world and
yes.
positioned it in some of the most astoundingly beautiful places and right. took photos of those places yeah. and made this calendar.
Well, it's a parody of classic scenic calendars. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's and they're very you know subtly placed. So it's kind of like a Where's Waldo.
Ah, yeah.
You know, first people are drawn to the beautiful photography, and then it slowly dawns on them that is not a log or a piece of dead wood.
And Steven Spielberg ordered 5,000 of these things.
They did. Right. They had someone evidently gave Steven one of the calendars for Christmas or Hanukkah, and he thought it was so funny. And they had a movie coming out called Envy that was starring Jack Black and Ben Stiller, and it was about a guy who invented this spray that would make dog poop disappear called Vapoorizer. Well, anyway, he sent it to the publicity department thinking that, you know, it would be a great way to promote the movie. So they ordered a jillion, like 5,000 calendars to send out to radio stations like yours and TV stations as a promotional thing, along with a fake can of the Vaporizer. I mean, and
this
it was great advertising for us. I mean, you know, they did years worth for
yeah.
us, and it was free, yeah. and they paid us.
Last month you had the butt crack calendar, this year. The monthly dues, and this is your second year doing this calendar?
No, it's our seventh.
Seventh
Holy year.
Holy cow.
Yeah, we're into the six figures in sales with this.
Wow, the 2009 dog poop calendar. And you also brought me, and I'll hold these up for our Tom Vision camera, a dog poo chocolate.
Yeah, chocolate dewdrops.
And a chocolate dewdrops.
It's a turd of a pound.
And also a little
solid milk chocolate. I mean a third of a pound.
A third of a pound, that's yeah. quite right. And also a squeaky toy that is shaped
poop.
Like...
poop squeaks.
Yep, poop squeaks.
And we also do a brown poupon, mustard. We do poop tarts, kitty roca, diet poopsie,
This is great. So if you want to find out more about the ultimate holiday gifts, and Scott, thanks so much for being with us today. This is great. Scott Brunton's company, Watch Your Step Productions. The website is monthlydoos, D-O-O-S.
When you care enough to give a crap.
There you go. They give the very best. Scott, thanks so much for dropping
thanks
by.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's 11 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls, 866-303-2270 on the news of the day. And what's the deal with the Bush administration trying to tell the Obama administration how they should be concerned about foreign policy?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's not pleasant to talk about, but it's one thing that every man over the age of 30 should know about, an enlarged prostate. Prostate enlargement can cause frequent urination and even sexual problems. So between getting up in the middle of the night to urinate and possible sexual problems, an enlarged prostate becomes a giant pain in the... Well, you get the idea. Now, what if I told you there was an all-natural way to help your body keep your prostate healthy? There is. It's called Beta Prostate, and it's an all-natural prostate vitamin. No crazy medications with strange side effects, just a natural supplement that helps maintain your prostate. Beta Prostate has proven ingredients that target and feed your prostate with healthy nutrients. If you're over the age of 30, be proactive in keeping your prostate in good health. Try Beta Prostate risk-free. Call 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803. Your health is too important to wait, so call now, 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party. And it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KBOJ.
Do you think we can afford a big TV, like one of those 42-inch models?
Those are great, and the prices have gotten lower.
I know. I saw a Panasonic 42-inch for just $7.99 and a new Sony for $9.99. Those are really good deals.
Not so fast. We need to be careful and make sure we get the best deal. Let's look at video-only's prices for a 42-inch TV. Well, here they are.
I don't believe it. 42 inches for $6.49? That's $150 less than the other stores.
I know, and they've got Sony and Samsung and Panasonic and LG and Toshiba to choose from.
Those are the best brands. And we can get a 42-inch for $6.49.
At Video Only we can.
We better check out their TVs before we buy or...
We'll be sorry.
At Video Only, you won't find huge stores with refrigerators or computers, but you will find the best deals on HD TVs, Blu-rays, cameras, camcorders, and home theater systems. Shop around. Just make sure you visit Video Only, because if you don't...
You'll be sorry.
In Jansen Beach, Clackamas, Beaverton, and Salem. Video Only.
Hey, Tom Hartman here. Did you know that on average, union workers earn 30% more than non-union workers? They also enjoy better health care, better benefits, and higher pensions. Don't wait for a change in legislation to start getting what you deserve today. Fighting for workers' rights for over 40 years, the AWPPW represents thousands of workers in the Northwest from a variety of industries. Make your confidential call to the AWPPW at 800-542-0708 or visit them online at awppw.com. You can have a voice.
A day of beauty awaits you. This Thursday, go to 620kpoj.com and get a $50 certificate from Fagan School of Hair Design for only $25. It's Half Price Thursday, brought to you by Fagan School of Hair Design and 620kpoj.com.
Hi, I'm Cheryl Crow, cancer survivor. If you want to know where the leading cancer research is being done, check out City of Hope Cancer Center. New drugs, new treatments that are saving lives everywhere. For information, go to CherylCrowForHope.org.
Road conditions have you worried? Enjoy the sure-footed confidence of a new four-wheel drive Jeep from Beaverton's Northwest Jeep. Save up to $14,000 on select models now during Northwest Jeep's 2008 closeout. See their entire inventory online at nwjeep.com. Your best bet for Jeep, Beaverton's Northwest Jeep.
AM 620, KPOJ.
They've gone out of their way to be noisier than before.
Portland's only progressive talk station. AM 620, KPOJ. KPOJ. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station. AM 620, KPOJ.
16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, the full court press is on. I'm telling you, this is, they're not just rewriting history. They're trying to rewrite the future. That's what's going on. Yesterday, Frank Gaffney, who's been on this program a number of times, was on Chris Matthews' show, Hardball, and Chris Matthews just, you know, nailed him with this thing brilliantly. But
we wanted to get him out of power. That was the real reason.
No, the real reason was we thought he constituted a mortal threat to the American people, and prophylactic action was necessary.
A mortal,
and I think
you
the American,
still use
the American
strategic
people
language.
Should be delighted.
You believe
that
a mortal threat to the United States, an existential, a strategic threat to the United States. No. This guy over in Iraq is still a threat to the United States. Where do you get this from?
Not,
we can't find the weapons. We can't find the rationale.
Chris,
I didn't say existential. Let's split hairs here. Yeah, the fact of the matter is that George Bush is still telling this story.
The larger point is...
Whoa, way too loud, excuse me.
The larger point is, and the fundamental question is, does Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely. And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in.
Wrong.
Why? And therefore, after a reasonable request...
Why?
We decided to remove him from power along with other nations... so as to make sure he was not a threat to the United States.
Right. So here we have now the Bush administration. This is in today's New York Times. Bush prepares crisis briefings to aid Obama by Peter Baker. Since the 11 attacks, the commission that investigated the September 11 attacks, noting problems during the handover from President Bill Clinton to Mr. Bush, called for a better process since a catastrophic attack could occur with little or no notice, as its report put it. Well, that's a good idea. And the Bush administration, according to this New York Times article, has taken it to heart and is doing everything they can to help the Obama administration. Broadly speaking, and in principle, this is probably a good thing. You know, that the Obama administration have as much information as possible. But they need to be getting information from places other than just the Bush administration, because the Bush administration had it so wrong. They are still lying about the weapons inspectors. They're still lying. Saddam Hussein did not have a weapons program. He told us he did not have a weapons program. He invited the inspectors in. It was George W. Bush who pulled the inspectors out, not Saddam Hussein. It was George W. Bush who decided to go to war, not Saddam Hussein. In fact, Hussein was writing a novel. He never believed that this would happen. It's amazing when you consider the lies that the Bush administration has told that led us into this war. And now this bunch of proven liars. I mean, there's just no other way to say it than proven liars are going to be advising the Obama administration. Barack Obama, be very careful. Be very careful, because these people, George W. Bush.
As a condition for ending the Persian Gulf War, the Iraqi regime was required to destroy its weapons of mass destruction.
And they did.
To cease all development of such weapons.
And they did.
And to stop all support for terrorist groups.
Well, sort of they did.
The Iraqi regime has violated all of those obligations.
No, just one out of three.
It possesses and produces chemical and biological weapons.
No, it doesn't.
It is seeking nuclear weapons.
No, it's not.
We must also never forget the most vivid events of recent history. On September the 11th, 2001, America felt its vulnerability, even to threats that gather on the other side of the earth.
See, this is George Bush playing out the narrative that Robert McKee teaches so brilliantly in his workshops and seminars and books on how to write novels and screenplays, that the hero in a story can only be as good or as strong as the anti-hero is evil. In other words, the power of a story, and make no mistake about it, politics is all about story. Culture and society is all about story. The power of the hero in the story is exclusively dependent upon the power of the anti-hero. Consider for a moment some of the extreme examples. If you had, for example, Batman or Superman, they would be incredibly boring stories if you didn't have supervillains. Superman without Lex Luthor would be, you know, who cares? Okay, here's this guy, he's the Man of Steel, he runs around. What did he do today? Oh, he stopped a bank robbery. Big deal. Batman, oh, he's, you know, they flash the bat thing. Why? Because somebody just stuck up a seven light. Come on. In order for somebody to become a hero, they must have an anti-hero. And George Bush saw in Osama bin Laden and created in the minds of many Americans in Saddam Hussein the anti-hero that he needed in order to become a hero so that he could have a president, to quote him, a successful presidency. This is no accident. Not at all. They created this thing from right from the get-go. Oh, boy, here's our opportunity. Back, you know, back before Bush became president, 1998, they were talking about how they needed a Pearl Harbor kind of event to galvanize the American public in support of something like bombing Iraq and overthrowing Saddam Hussein, who represented no threat basically to anybody. And by the way, was our bulwark against any possible threat from Iran. But these guys, they went off, and Bush just continues to lie about it.
First, I'm asked why Iraq is different from other countries or regimes that also have terrible weapons. While there are many dangers in the world, the threat from Iraq stands alone because it gathers the most serious dangers of our age in one place.
See, this is the thing that concerns me the most, is that the Bush administration right now has this golden moment of opportunity to indoctrinate the great young minds who are coming in with the Obama administration in their worldview of fear and angst and anger and revenge and terror. I mean, I've played this before, but it's worth revisiting. This is, I'm not going to run the whole thing because it's 2.5 minutes, but this is just a series of excerpts from George W. Bush's speech to the Republican National Convention in 2004 when he was nominated to be president. You'll recall when Roosevelt accepted his nomination for presidency, he talked about how, you know, we had to move forward and let's create a great new nation and we will rise above the... Now, this is what Bush had to say.
Be afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists, danger, doomed killers. Be afraid. The world will drift toward tragedy. May God bless you. Evil God, Iraq, darkness, the continuing danger.
And this,
terrorism.
This is the kind of thing, this is the Bush worldview. These guys are terrified little men. You know, they're afraid of everything. They're afraid of their own shadow. They are projecting their own evil into others.
And Al-Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks.
And this frankly concerns me. It concerns me a lot. And so I just want to put that out there and let you cogitate on it. This is really not so much a talk radio topic, I suppose, because in my opinion, there's not two sides to this. This is pretty straightforward. Obama, watch out! 866-303-2270, your telephone number. Jay in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi, Tom. I wanted to go back to Dinesh D'Souza for a second.
Yes, sir.
He tried to slip something past that I've heard before. He misquoted the Declaration. He said that we're endowed by our Creator when, as you know, Thomas Jefferson chose his words very carefully. And he said people are endowed by their Creator. In my case, my Creator is my parents. And they both served in World War II. And I think that that empowers them to endow me with my inalienable rights. And I've heard that misquote quite frequently.
That's very interesting. That's a note. Let me find my pocket constitution here and dig this out. This is calm down. This is, here we go. The Declaration. We hold these truths. You're right. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Huh. Thank you very much for that, Jay.
Okay.
I appreciate it. Thank you. John in Johnson City, Tennessee. Hey, John, what's up?
Can you hear me?
I can. Quite well.
Atheists are not
They are not part of a religion.
They are not, I'm sorry?
Atheists are not, it is not a religious, a religion. Atheism is not a religion.
Yeah, by and large, you're right.
Okay, no, completely.
No, I would say, I would submit to you that there are some people who are evangelical about their atheism, and that throws it into the category of religion. But
no.
You know, they're a very small minority.
No, if you want to know about atheism, listen to atheist.
Are you trying to evangelize me here, John?
No. If you want to know about a group of people, then listen to the organized group of people, such as the Atheist of Austin.
Right.
We are not promoting. If they're saying that, if they're saying that they're evangelizing, it means they're just spreading a certain concept. We're not out to eat your kids or change your community or anything else.
Well, of course not. You know, as I've said many times, I have tremendous respect for atheists. My father was one. We'll leave it at that. I just spent 30 minutes arguing with Dinesh D'Souza defending atheism. I think that should stand on its own. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and our Piggies Alerts for the day.
Have you seen the pink of piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the pink of piggies staring at the dead. Always have clean shirts.
Oh, they always have clean shirts. Well, the rocket scientists who were promoting privatization to the city of Washington, D.C., got their way in one venue in 1998, convincing that city to replace the city-owned parking meters with corporate-owned parking meters. Let's privatize the parking. What was the consequence of this? Well, I would think any intelligent person would say, if the government is doing it, they're not going to have to skim off 10% for their stockholders. They're not going to have to skim off a couple million bucks a year for the CEO's salary. They're not going to have to skim off money for the senior management. They're not going to have to skim off money for the marketing and advertising and promotion and all that kind of thing. All they have to do is put up parking meters and take the money and do it well and do it right if the city's doing it. But if a private corporation does it, then your costs would go up. Doesn't it seem common sense? Well, no, it didn't seem common sense because everybody's still believing Reaganomics. So they privatized the parking meters in Washington, D.C. in 1998. And guess what? New government report. This is actually a D.C. government report. Looked into this and they said that the privatization of the parking meters has driven up the costs to the city of as much as $9 million. In addition to that, over 7,000 tickets were improperly issued to vehicles parked at broken meters. Well, this for-profit corporation wasn't so quick to fix them, apparently. And residents' complaints about parking meters before privatization, 3,000 a year on average, 3,652 in 1997. After privatization, remember, 3,000 a year before privatization, after privatization, residents, people who live in D.C., their complaints about parking meters, in 2005, 89,840 complaints. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Rob in Orange County, California. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, how are you?
Just great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
You know, I just wanted to say that don't you think that we basically live in a time of just complete paranoid media? It seems like the post 9/11 shock syndrome exists, and the media is really afraid of saying anything that's embarrassing about the United States. And for the last 8 years and longer, decades, there's a lot of things that we've done wrong, but they just hide behind this image that, you know, everything is going to be better today. And some of the people that in the media, the Joe Scarboroughs, and it's just pathetic. They're all liars.
Well, 2 points about that, Rob, and you know, point well made. But A, I would submit to you that America has never been good at introspection. I mean, we've never been particularly good at this, particularly since arguably the 1870s, you know, is when it really began with the rise of the yellow journalism and the Hearst papers and all this kind of stuff. And we basically never looked back. And people who do look into the history of America in ways that aren't particularly flattering typically get marginalized, A. And I think that that's just human nature. But B, the good news is that people want real news. People want to know what's going on. And that's why you're seeing things like Rachel Maddow's show, the Keith Olbermann's show, Countdown, Air America's programming, Progressive Talk Radio programming, all over the progressive websites dominate the Internet. That's why you're seeing this rise of this, you could arguably call it alternative media, because people want to know what's going on. Amy Goodman's show, Democracy Now!, I mean, right across the board, there's a whole spectrum of people who are speaking the truth. And getting, I mean, this show, we beat Bill O'Reilly in Los Angeles almost 2-1. We beat Rush Limbaugh in Seattle and Portland. And you know, doing very well, thank you very much. And it's because we're talking about the issues, the real issues that people want to talk about, rather than just, you know, tossing out talking points. David in Portland. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I
just had a couple questions, and first of all, I'd like to make one comment here. I have a friend who's a pretty conservative Republican. He has also disowned George Bush in the past year or two, last 4 or 5 years.
A lot of that going around, you know?
Yeah, right, I know, but what I was saying was that he told me that he gets pretty bored with listening to the talk radio from the right, and so he stopped listening to Rush Limbaugh and he stopped listening to Sean Hannity. He tunes into Air America once in a while, you know, or your program. And but I had a couple of questions for you. The first one had to do with your comment on John Adams' relationship with Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
And it seemed to me like the movie implied that there was kind of a mutual respect or friendship that lasted until their death. Didn't they die? Wasn't that said where they died the same day?
Yeah, they did, actually. And Adams' dying words were, Thomas Jefferson lives, and Jefferson had died a few hours earlier. Here's the arc of it, and just in a real short nutshell. These guys were friends and collaborators in the American Revolution. Jefferson wrote the first draft of the Declaration of Independence. Adams edited it, along with Ben Franklin and John Jay. They went into the Constitution said that whoever got the most votes at that time became president. Whoever got the second most votes became vice president. After the Washington administration, Adams and Jefferson both ran. Jefferson came in second. He became vice president. Adams became president. They went into that administration with some conflict, but by the second year of the administration, when Adams started putting people in jail for speaking out against him in newspapers, for writing editorials against him, when he pushed through in 1798 the Alien and Sedition Acts and started whipping up fear of France with the XYZ affair, at that point, the day that Adams signed the Alien and Sedition Act, Thomas Jefferson left town as a statement of protest. They basically never talked again in person after that. I mean, there's some passings in the White House, as it were, but they became political enemies and they became personal enemies by that time. In the election of 1800, Jefferson beat Adams and became president. Adams wanted a second term. And there was speculation at the times that Adams was going to refuse to leave the White House. He didn't. He did the right thing. He left the White House. Jefferson took over. And they never spoke again in person. What happened was, when they were both old men and both ex-presidents, a mutual friend of theirs, and I think it might have been Benjamin Rush, I'd have to go back and look, but a mutual friend of theirs said, you guys, said to Jefferson, you guys should clean this stuff up. And I think both of them, with an eye to history initially, decided that they should have some correspondence and just try to set the record straight. and they started corresponding with each other, and they became very fast friends once again in their last years. In the last, again, it's been 20 years since I've read the biographies, so I you know, whether it was the last 5 years or the last 8 years, I don't know, of their lives. But, you know, they were both in their 70s, as I recall, when they died. So their last years, they spent as friends, but they never saw each other in person during that time. They only corresponded by letter. So, anyhow, Andrew in Huntington Beach. Hey, Andrew, what's up? No, Andrew. Joy in Santa Cruz. Lady Liberty. Hey, how you doing, Joy?
Hey there. How are you?
Great. What's up?
Well, Merry Christmas, first of all.
Well, thank you. Merry Christmas to you.
We got snow here.
Yeah, we did here, too.
In Santa Cruz, of all places.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. But I'm calling because I've been waiting for you to talk about this. I have to switch phones. My other one, battery just started to go dead. I've been calling because I've been wanting to talk to you about what Better Place is doing. Are you familiar with them?
You're talking about the electric cars in the San Francisco Bay Area?
Yeah, well, it's not just the Bay Area anymore. They've also are setting up an infrastructure for Hawaii.
Yeah, this is the one Tom Friedman wrote an op-ed about last week.
Yeah, and I was hoping you'd possibly get an interview with Shai Agassi if you can.
That's a good idea. It's a good idea. We should pursue that. It's kind of ironic that the battery on your phone died just as you were calling to talk about the wonders of electric cars.
It is ironic, isn't it? Well, I was hoping you would talk about it because this is going to basically liberate the whole, not just the Bay Area, but all of the coast of California, because they're going to bring down the electric infrastructure down to L.A. and San Diego.
Good thing about this, Joy, and we did a show on this when I was in Denmark, and we had on I forget his title, but the guy who is in the Danish cabinet who's in charge of their electrical infrastructure, and he pointed out that 18% of their electricity is generated by windmills. In other words, it's wind power. It's not powered by fossil fuels. But they only use it during the day, by and large. They use very little of it at night. And so they were the first place to do this. The government has put millions of dollars into the development and production, and I believe that they're starting production this year, of electric cars. And they're setting up this system where, because the utilities are owned by the government, they can just do this, where during the nighttime you can buy electricity from the government cheap. During the day you can sell it back to the government more expensively. So at night, you plug your car in and you charge it up and you buy electricity for 2 cents a kilowatt hour, for example. And then during the day, you drive to work. You still got 90% of the charge in the battery in your car. You only need 5% to get home. So you sell back 70% of the charge in your car, for example, to the government by plugging it in at your place of work. You sell it back at 5 cents a kilowatt hour. You make a profit. But the cool thing is that if they can get the right ratio of cars to windmills, that 18% of power generated by the wind can actually represent more than 30%, 35% of the total electricity in the grid, because those cars have become a massive storage device, just this giant storage device. And yes, there are not just one, but there are several companies in the United States that are looking at doing the same thing. In fact, when we had T. Boone Pickens on the show a couple of months ago, I laid this out for him, and he was like, "You're kidding!" Like it was some sort of mystery or secret or something. I'm like, "No, you need to look into this." Of course, maybe he's all about water. I mean, that's a whole other thing. But anyhow, yeah, it's a great story, and it needs to be told more widely. 45 minutes past the end.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Lives are even more vulnerable than our real lives, especially when it comes to the nightmare of identity theft.
I call the year after I got my identity stolen my lost year. Every day, another phone call to a bank, the DMV, credit card companies, it's like I had a second job.
Don't become a victim. Get Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault. Protect yourself with patented internet scanning technology that alerts you of potential identity theft. And with ID Vault, lets you make your passwords, screen names, and credit card numbers virtually impossible to steal when you're online. Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault. Serious 21st century stuff for 21st century crime. Get total protection. Call 877-600-2669. Sign up now and get Identity Guard Total Protection with ID Vault free for 30 days. Just pay shipping and handling. Call 877-600-2669 today. That's 877-600-2669 or visit identityguard.com.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KDOJ. 620KDOJ.com.
Rates, policy forms, and availability vary by state. Why spend more than you have to on your life insurance? Did you know that term life insurance rates have fallen over 60% in the last 10 years? I'm Byron Udell, founder of AccuQuote. At AccuQuote.com, we monitor the rates, features, and financial strength of hundreds of life insurance products. For example, a healthy 40-year-old can protect his family with $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $19 a month. Female rates are even lower. And don't forget to ask us about the new term life policies that guarantee your money back even if you don't die. Since 1986, we've helped hundreds of thousands of people just like you save a fortune on their life insurance. Why not find out how much you can save? Write down this number and call today for your free quote. Call 800-500-6963. One 5-minute call is all it takes. 800-500-6963. That's 800-500-6963.
Results may vary. Additional products and services will be offered for sale.
This is not your father's economy. The old standards of working one job and putting money away towards retirement no longer apply. Today, success or failure depends on your financial IQ. You need to attend a free Rich Dad Education Workshop coming to the Portland area. Based on the teachings from the best-selling book Rich Dad Poor Dad, this 90-minute event will show you how to survive and build security during these hard economic times. We teach you why your house is not an asset. You may not want to diversify. You may not want to invest in 401ks or mutual funds. Saving money will never make you rich. These are just some of Rich Dad's teachings that will change the way you think about money. Attend this free Rich Dad Education training coming to the Portland area today and tomorrow only. Reserve your place now at richdadeducation.com or call 1-800-680-7976. That's 1-800-680-7976. Register now and receive a free gift just for attending. 1-800-680-7976.
Alaska Airlines. Spend less on Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air as they welcome your first bag free of charge. Visit alaskaair.com.
Music Millennium has over 100,000 gift ideas, including the largest recorded music selection in the Northwest, music and movie DVDs, vinyl, vintage toys and games, and other unique gift ideas. Happy holidays from Music Millennium, located at 32nd and East Burnside.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Sorrow, toast to hells and wells. Tomorrow the holidays are here, and we're still at war. Religious wars and domination, world trade and globalization, the prices of petroleum soar. Lonesome churches are packed with sinners, non-believers and new beginners. The holidays are here, and we're still at war.
And a sad thing it is. Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com for our live free chat room, airamerica.com for our free video stream and audio streams. And Dave in Portland. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hi, Tom.
What's up?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Fellow house voter downstream from you a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to, the guy that called a little while ago was saying that atheism isn't a religion, but I think, wasn't it Krishnamurti that pointed out that not believing is the same as believing, and otherwise so there it can become a religion?
It was Jay Krishnamurti, yeah. And making an affirmative statement of not believing is a form of belief. Making an affirmative statement of not knowing is not a statement of belief, in my opinion. Now, keep
right.
This is my opinion, and arguably Jay Krishnamurti's who really did a great job of, in at least in the writings of his that I've read, I've probably only read 400 or 500 pages of his writings, but did a great job of dancing around even the existence of God. Krishnamurti was more concerned with whether or not consciousness existed.
Right. It's like meditation was the clearest you could come to truth.
Right. Yeah.
You know, instead of living in your mind with believing or not believing.
Exactly. He was all about consciousness. You're stating the way that I would put it. Yeah. Thank you very much, Ray in Seattle. Hey, Ray, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted. I'm great. Educated by you, but basically my point today was the fact that you were talking about Bush and he needs bogeymen, and I was just paralleling that to the fact that so many mainstream religions need bogeymen.
Yes.
They have to have a devil, they have to have a Satan, they have to have somebody to counteract who they feel is the good guy. And so I would say that most religions do have that parallel.
And what you see is the mystical parts that break out of those religions. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, the Sufis out of Islam tend not to, or if they do, it's treated like a historical anachronism. And I would say some of the more progressive of the Protestant faiths, you know, the United Church of Christ, for example, which openly embraces gays into their, among others, you know, interracial couples for a long, long time, you know, just right across the board. Everybody is welcome here. You will not hear a sermon preached about, you know, Satan's going to come and get you in one of those churches. So,
yeah, I admit there are those which are a little softer on that, but I just was struck by that particular parallel.
Yeah, interesting point. Thank you very much, Ray. I appreciate the call. Rob in San Jose. Hey, Rob.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, listen, you made a comment that you thought that atheism, that sometimes atheism mirrors a religion because of maybe the passionate of somebody of an atheist speaking. And I had to, you know, call you to task on that because atheism is just another point of view that's backed by, you know, reason, rationality, and science. And we don't make any, as Carl Sagan said, extraordinary claims that require extraordinary evidence. We don't go to regular meetings to reinforce our disbelief. I don't even think of myself as an atheist during the day. I don't think about my disbelief during the day when I'm, you know, going about my day. And I mean, so it's just, I'm just trying to say that.
Then I say for you, it's not a religion. And I think for the majority of people who call themselves atheists, it's not a religion.
Well, that's because the fact. Well, yeah, but when we get, you know.
But for Madeline Murray O'Hare, it was.
Say again?
For Madeline Murray O'Hare, it was. She built her life around it. She was an evangelist for it. It was a religion.
Right. That's a long time ago, and you know.
Her errors are out there. Her spiritual errors, shall we say?
Yeah, but even so, what with Dawkins and Harris and Hitchens, even you have a new type of outspoken intellectual atheist coming forward. Just, you know, and it may sound like they're evangelizing, but no, it's just passionate belief in something that's non-belief. You know, that we don't.
I agree with you, Rob. I agree with you. I have tremendous respect for Christopher Hitchens, for example. I agree with you, and at the same time, will you agree with me that there are still a few kind of last enders out there who are essentially evangelists for atheism?
Yeah, but that's why do you use the word evangelist? Because they might be passionate in their
because they're trying to convince other people to think the way they do. And what I find in religions, and I find the same thing in a small minority of atheists, is that those people who are trying to convince other people to think the way they do are the people who are the, frankly, in my opinion, the weakest in their belief. And they're trying to validate.
Are you trying to convert people from their religion, you mean?
Yeah, whether it's evangelical Christians or whether it's evangelical atheists, my experience in life has been that those people who are the most aggressive in trying to get everybody to think like they do are the ones who are the most unsure of whether the way they think might actually be true. And the way that they can prove to themselves that the way they think might be true is by convincing a whole bunch of other people, and then they can say to themselves, see, I was able to convince other people this, therefore it must be true. And I think it's
I have to disagree in the sense of how relevant those type of things are, because you see, would you call, you know, Richard Dawkins, or would you call Sam Harris somebody who's trying to convert people, or just trying to point out the horrific effects and dangers of religion as it is in a society?
Yeah, I'd say that Sam Harris treats it as a religion. In fact, he's treating it like a business. Richard Dawkins, no, not so much. But we're splitting hairs here, Rob. We're arguing about how many angels are on the head of a pin, and we're out of time. But thank you for the call. It's a topic that never gets old. Tomorrow, in fact, Fred Edwards, the American Humanist Association, will be talking about this. Plus, Dr. Louis Malmadrona is going to drop by. Hopefully, we've got an incredible snowstorm hitting Portland here today, so we'll see, with his advice on beating the holiday blues. Don't forget, democracy begins with you, my friends. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.